You are now listening to A Tale from a World Asunder.
Welcome back, everyone. My name is Simon, and I will once again be your GM. Joining me, as ever, are the charming Louisa.
Hi.
And effervescent Nick.
It's me.
In our last episode, our heroes traveled from the edges of the Meridian Imperial Republic to its heart. And as they did so, they worked through the doubt, the uncertainty, the mystery, and the expectation of what they would find upon their arrival. Whatever they may have planned came to a head as Omar, seconds before Freedom's Wings was set to dock, noticed a familiar but not too fond face among the crowd awaiting them on the platform.
When we land, we're going to have all our paperwork in order. I've been working on a few things while we've been traveling. Mila, Omar, you are now both technically, officially employees of me, as the paperwork dictates. I just need you to sign, essentially, contracts. Omar, I will not be using your real name. I have come up with an identity for you. Hopefully, with people I know, it will mostly be overlooked. But we'll just be careful. There will be someone at the dock who comes on board, deals with our paperwork and make sure our manifest is in order. Which all my paperwork is in order, as it always is. And the passengers will get off first, then we will have the chance to leave. Once we are out, I will need to speak to Cherry, my associate. I've worked with her a few times before. She's one of the managers of the dock, and she takes good care of me and my ship, and has in the past. We've got a decent relationship, working relationship anyway. She and I will have a quick meeting. I'll tell her I'm going to be here for a few days and need to put it in dock, in the dry docks. And then I can get us to the train station. Is that what you said we needed to go to next? And then from there, that is the extent of what I know to do.
Does the immigration have some kind of, like, magic detector, sensor, radar? Is there anything to making Omar disappear?
How do you mean disappear?
Be invisible.
Oh. It would help. But it would also be, I assume, a slight beacon of magic if somebody is looking, no?
Mila's gonna look over the dock and try to see if she sees anything that looks like a metal detector for magic.
Give me a perception check.
Can Pinky help me?
Yes.
It's a flat 10.
You don't see anything in particular that would indicate magical detection, but that might be because you can't see it, or it might be because it's not there.
Would I know if there would be magical security?
You would know that it's not out of the question, especially in Antonia. It's costly, so anything that they would use would be because they already suspect something.
Okay. As long as we're not suspicious, I think we should be fine.
I think it's too much of a gamble. I mean, I don't know if there would be people here waiting for us, but I think let's go with your plan, and then once we're past security, we don't want to make something happen in the middle of a full dock.
Omar chimes in. I can't be invisible. That manifest, Captain, it has your exact number of passengers and staff, is that correct?
I can change that, but yes.
If it looks like it's been too recently altered, then
fair
enough.
That
feels like it'll arouse more suspicion than me just...
After we're past immigration, then I'll do it. Just so you're not showing your face around the city too much. But let's stick with the captain's plan for now.
I have an idea. Come with me. and he will bring them to his quarters.
You're entering port. The kobolds are already, like, readying the ship to ground. You have about 5 in-game minutes before docking procedures begin.
That's fine. Adelaide will go to the captain's quarters, show Omar and Mila his wardrobe, which is kind of like a built-in closet, like a walk-in closet. And off the rack, pull a uniform that looks like it matches the kobolds, with a white shirt, brown sort of overalls, and a red bandana, as well as he'll take a bright blue hat that Mila has never seen him wear, another sort of cowboy hat, and say, put the bandana over your face and the hat over your head. With the eye patch, we can just pass it off as disfigurement. It's kind of not great, but it'll pass muster.
Omar nods and begins putting on the disguise as instructed.
Mila, unfortunately, I don't have anything in your size, so...
It's okay, I'll be the ship's mage.
That's fine with me. I need to go make an announcement and get all my paperwork in order. And he'll direct Mila to grab 2 or 3 books and a pile of papers that are on his desk and just have them ready. And he'll go to the wheel, to the ship's horn, and into it say,
attention passengers, we are now landed in the great city of Antonia. Please make sure you have all your belongings. If you do not leave this ship with all your belongings, they will be sold at the next port of call. Additionally, if you have any questions or concerns, please save them for the people on the docks.
I will and ask he'll you bring him through the rest of the docking procedure really quickly, tell them what to expect, tell them what he expects of them, and at the end of it says,
and I hope you have a very pleasant stay in Antonia. If you ever need anything else, just remember the name Freedom's Wings and Captain Adelaide Firehammer.
And he'll hang the horn up and go back down to the deck where Mila and Omar are presumably waiting for him.
It is at this point that Omar makes his observation in the crowd with which we ended last episode. Captain?
Yes?
They may be expecting us.
What do you mean?
You told me about an elf? Pale?
Adelaide will look at Mila, eyes wide.
Is he here?
In the crowd. Omar grabs your hand, Mila, and I think very softly, such that Adelaide can't hear it, says, we should be fine unless he tries to turn me.
It's a full dock. Confidential procedure. And I'm here.
Give me a persuasion check.
It's not good at all. That's a total of 8.
His palms are sweaty. Captain, 2 officers in green staff coats are boarding Freedom's Wings. In what you know is a routine check, they'll be coming to you for, like, landing documents, essentially, and also to find out who your shipping agent in the city is. I'm assuming that's Cherry.
Yeah. On the deck of the ship, Adelaide is lined up with the 3 kobolds, Mila, and Omar, in that order. waiting for this duo to come aboard and do their routine check. Papers in hand.
The two officers in charge of checking your papers and staff come up to you, Adelaide, a sort of gruff-looking human, maybe a foot shorter than you, but not much more than that. Looks up and says, papers, please.
He hands them over.
How many of these papers are forgeries?
Technically, the only thing that's a forgery is Omar's.
Gaelic, essentially his ID.
His certificate of nationality.
Exactly. Everything else is a true document because when everybody boarded the ship, they gave him a signa, he gave it back. Everything is paid.
Mm-hmm.
So all of their documents are signed, official, and fine. Mila's is a actual work contract that is... It is an official contract.
Mm-hmm.
The terms are loose and easily wiggled out of. A temporary contract of employment of, for this job only, she is the ship's mage. Pending possible future jobs. It's a very, very loose, open contract, but it is an official contract. Omar's essentially is similarly loose, but instead of saying ship's mage, he is just a deckhand that Adelaide can essentially just say, oh yeah, I picked him up. I need an extra set of hands because this was a large number of people. So everything is above board and legal except for who Omar is.
I will need a forger's tools check, which for you, I think, is just raw intelligence.
Great.
That's gonna be a natural 20.
For context, I did in fact roll as he said that. And I did in fact roll a 3 minus 1.
The officer goes through document after document. Mila, as he gets to Omar's fake ID, you see that that most crucial piece of the ID, the photograph, would not match. What does it look like as this moment is altered by Mila's magic?
There have been one too many times where Mila dictated a success for something related to Omar's well-being. It's less even than a reflex. If you blink, you'll miss her eyes glazing over pink and bright blue very quickly. Because not in a rational, mindful way, but in a much more visceral sense, she has seen how this can go, and she needs it to go one way.
The ID flashes as though slightly reflective, and you see the image appear of a horrifically pockmarked, disfigured face on the fake ID, justifying a crew member wearing a face mask and an eye patch. This no longer looks like a fake ID. This looks like an unlucky ID. The kind of ID you would feel a little rude about questioning. And it's that little bit of added social pressure that makes the officer just skip over it.
This all appears to be in order. Your passengers will disembark and go through the regular checks, and your crew will disembark after. Is that in order?
Of course. Thank you, officer.
Anything you should be declaring in terms of customs?
Not that I know of. If my passengers have something, my passengers have something, but it's not mine.
Welcome to the capital, Captain Byhammer.
Have a nice day.
The officers begin to disembark your ship. Give me a perception check, Captain Byhammer.
Jesus.
That's an 11.
With my new stats, because we're now all, we leveled up. So I have a +8 to perception now, which is why I'm not rolling. Even if I roll ass, it doesn't matter.
What Adelaide does not see happening is once the officers are a few feet away from the gangplank that connects the still buoyant airship to the ground, a cloaked figure stopping one of them and delivering a message before disappearing back into the crowd. The passengers disembark, carrying bags and documents, as countless passengers do through this and other ports daily, and are neatly filed into a line that looks like it will never end, of the mild interrogation of a country that makes it its business to know where its people are. That is not the line that you are destined for, because like most functioning ports, there is a separate line for crew. On the one hand, that means you spend less time in port, but in this particular case, I will remind you, it means that you go through the line without the cover of your passengers.
Traveling cloak donned over the poncho. Long duster. Bag long enough to hold a shotgun slung over the shoulder. Crew in a small huddle behind him. Adelaide will confidently and with purpose stride over to the line where the crew makes their passage through.
A lesser known but universally understood feature of security lines is that the way you present yourself as you walk through them is as much of a reason that you might be checked as anything about your documents or person. Adelaide, give me an intimidation check. Remember, you have a +1 to these.
A 21.
And this is the unfortunate part where I do tell you you wanted to roll low.
Well,
God fucking damn it.
Why would you want to be intimidating in a security line? You arrive at a desk where another officer is sat going over stacks of papers for incoming crew. The group of halfling stevedores, so dock workers for whom this is a job and aren't traveling through the port but are just kind of coming in and out of security to load cargo, breeze right through security. And as you arrive with your crew in tow, you present your documents. The officer, a somewhat shorter half-elven woman, looks them over.
In staring her in the face, Adelaide's eyes are a mixture of, I just want to get this over with, and I dare you to fuck with me.
Taking a few seconds longer than you know is normal, the agent looks up and meets your gaze for the first time, hands you Omar's ID, and says, I'm going to need this member of your crew to step aside for an additional medical screening.
Adelaide will take a step back and say, my ship's mage has checked him over several times. I will let her speak for me. And I'll step back and let Mila, and look to Mila.
Ma'am, I think you'll find it may be safer for you to let us through. Your dock officers have already confirmed his identity in the first paper check back in the ship.
This isn't a matter of identity, ma'am. This is a matter of medical safety. It's possible that your companion here may need to be quarantined.
Correct. This is partly why we are
coming into Antonia. The scientists here and physicians here are a lot better. I think
you're just gonna want to let us through.
And Mila is going to cast suggestion.
And this person is gonna roll a 10. As she uses her second and last portent roll.
All right.
This could go so poorly.
You cast the spell, and the spell works and takes effect. But suggestion has material components. So what you're going to do for me is you're going to roll a stealth check.
Can I help by drawing focus by grunting and shifting my bag on my shoulder?
Yes.
Oh my god! I have rolled a natural 1 and a 3 for a total of 4.
Fuck.
Oh my god.
What does it look like as suggestion takes effect?
Mila's staff in her hand glows with these spirals going up it, and similar spirals go around this officer's hands, and their eyes glaze over pink as they start to finish the paperwork in the way
no,
it's meant to.
Of course. No reason to detain you further. Welcome to the Capitol. Move right along.
Thank you kindly.
Mila turns to Omar and Adelaide and says, let's move.
As you move for the door, you see at speed two officers on either side, both headed for the same door. You have seconds before the officers are in front of the door.
Is there a crowd around us?
There's a trickle of people coming through who have gotten through security. Passengers as well as crew.
Adelaide tips his hat down, rolls a cigarette, a special cigarette, lights it, smokes it, and while he breathes out, says to Mila and Omar, tip your hats down, blend in, and he will utter in Draconic, let them not see us. And he's going to cast Pass Without Trace. Not to try and stealth, per se. I mean, to stealth, but stealthing in the sense of they just become another face in the crowd.
All right, I am going to need stealth checks, and I'm going to include Omar in these stealth checks.
It's just a plus 10 bonus, right?
Yep. Omar, with the Pass Without a Trace, rolls a 21.
I'm rolling so bad. I think the universe is punishing me. I rolled a 2 for a total of 13.
Adelaide rolls a 31.
Mila, the officers are in front of the door watching the crowd go through. You know they are waiting to see you specifically. Having noticed you cast offensive magic on an officer of the law, with the help of Adelaide's magic, you beat their passive perception by 1.
Oh my god.
Adelaide is right behind her, though it's hard to tell. As Mila is about to walk through the door, he'll put a hand on the back of her head and tip it down, just really quickly, enough for her to stumble under their field of vision and get pushed through the hall.
Ow.
If she looks back for a moment, Adelaide is not there. He is instead on the other side, helping her back up. That was too close.
Thank you.
You realize that you made it through, but they caught you, and you used your real name.
Well, I'm fucked forever, so let's get out of here.
We're both fucked forever.
This is incredibly bad, and I am going to have an incredible amount of trouble.
Omar grabs your hand and goes, we're just going to make it through.
What is the name of the train station that we are ending up at?
We need to catch the train at Quinta Velmara.
The express to Lac Pellegrin.
Pellegrin Ville.
All right, I will meet you there. I need to deal with this paperwork, and you two need to get the fuck out of here.
Yes, Cap.
It shouldn't take me that long, but do not stick around here. I'll meet you at the train station if I can, and if not, I'll meet you at the end destination.
Okay. Be careful, Captain.
You too.
As they walk away,
Mila taps her staff on the ground, and she's still holding Omar's hand, but he goes invisible next to her.
Give me another stealth check. You still have the pass without trace, just to cast without being noticed.
That's a 21.
Omar, as he turns invisible, will whisper, "Are we sure I'm the one who needs this?"
You're gonna say that to me now?
Fair point. Thank you. I know it's caused a problem, but if you hadn't done that, if they'd pulled me away, I'd be a goner.
No one's pulling you away from me.
As Adelaide takes care of what is now business as usual at the port, Mila, you and your now invisible fiancé head towards Estacio Quinta del Mar, roughly Independence Station, or Independence Day Station. A glittering glass and steel palace of transportation, with high buttressed walls and a vast illuminated exterior that seems impossible because of the clouds of smog around it, until you realize that the glass is not transparent, it is magically reflective. So the station is always lit with bright sunlight, regardless of whether or not the sun shines above it. A massive clock that keeps not only time, but date, lunar position, and any other piece of chronology that you might wish for, or that a traveling mage might wish for, more specifically, decorates the far wall from the grand entrance, where ticketing booths and schedules and attendants are there to help with bags and any additional considerations that must be made for travel.
Mila hasn't traveled a lot before this stint. But she has been at the station before because it is one of her favorite places in town. She walks through it, though, with her head down. And she is going to check to see whether she's brought basically her Metropolitan Transport card with her so that she doesn't have to go through the ticketing booths.
This is a train journey to outside of the city proper. You would still need to purchase a ticket. The constructs that have been set up to handle ticketing, these like very copper bronze mechanical men with metal mustaches and sort of skeuomorphic conductor outfits. One at the nearest booth turns to you. And in the infinitely reproduced voice that is functionally the soul of Metropolitan Transport, goes, "And where can we take you today?"
"One for Pellegrin Field, please."
"Certainly." You exchange the requisite number of centimes.
What's his name?
Pardon?
What's his name? What's the name of the robot? The robot's gotta have a name that like all Antonians call
it. You're not sure of the official name that like the brand gave him.
Who cares about the official name?
But the city refers to him as Señor Tren.
She says, "Thank you, Señor. Looking forward to seeing you on the other side."
"A pleasure as always. Safe travels."
He's the best.
I love him.
He's the best. Mila's gonna beeline for the platform.
You hear that same mechanical voice over a loud, essentially magical PA system echoing through the station as you enter. You are in luck. The Peregrine Express, the line that goes from downtown to this small town outside of the city that is a frequent vacation destination, runs basically every hour. This is actually a new development. It used to be 4 times a day, but now it's up to every hour, so you won't have to wait around. Although, if you had to, this would be the best station to do it. It's one of the few that's outfitted with, like, a cafe adjacent to the platforms where you can actually, like, sit and have a drink while you're waiting for your train. And you haven't purchased anything fancy like a dining car ticket, because this is a 45-minute to typically an hour train journey. As you make your way to Platform 3, you hear Omar just take a deep breath.
What? What's up? We're almost there?
Yeah, almost there. I've never ridden without a ticket before.
There's a first time for everything.
I mean, trams, obviously, but...
What? Omar Montoya rode a tram without a ticket?
As the train comes in. Audience, I ask you to ruminate on the traditional D&D wisdom regarding the splitting of the party. Adelaide. You make your way through arrivals to the section where docking and shipping agents are located.
Passing a few guards, keeping Pass Without Trace going, he does have a thought, just a momentary intrusive thought, of how easy it would be to go over to an officer and turn in Omar and Mila. Get the reward money, and get them off his back.
What stops him?
It's not just the money. To his own surprise, he rationalizes it not as a duty of care, but he does start to realize he trusts them. He trusts that they wouldn't do it to him. And he cares about what they think of him, for better or for worse. And he's invested in their future. So he just keeps walking and finds Cherry's office.
You find an office you've visited before, and as you knock and are allowed to enter, who do you find on the other side?
High or low?
Oh, high or low?
I need to roll for something.
Oh, yeah, you do. Let's say low. I want low.
Okay, that's high.
Yeah.
It's a 12. Higher than 10.
Mom, I'm scared.
I didn't roll that high, so we're not going to go roll.
Come pick me up. I'm scared.
He is surprised to find not the woman he came into the room for. There is a woman there, seeming be some lineage of tiefling. Dark magenta skin, horns straight from her forehead, with a timepiece slowly ticking between them. Curled around her fingers is a series of rings and a pencil that is threaded through one hand, flies to the other, and is threaded through the next, with some sort of small enchantment. As she pours over paperwork, looks up with clear, very vibrant, icy blue eyes. Adelaide does not know this woman.
Ha, I'm sorry. I was looking for Cherry's office. She's usually here.
You found it, doll. You found it. Looks up from her paperwork. Cherry is on, let's call it sick leave. I'm filling in for her.
Right.
Tiara, pleasure to meet you.
It's Tiara, nice to meet you. My name is Captain Adelaide Vihammer.
Take a seat.
He'll sit down really awkwardly.
All right, what are we doing for you today, doll?
I've just, set in, docked, and I have all my paperwork here. Cherry usually handles my dossier.
I've got your file right here. They told me you was coming in.
Right.
You've got a nice vessel. Freedom's Wings, right?
Yeah, I keep her well maintained.
Everything looks to be in order.
Glad to hear it.
Huh. Now wait a minute.
Is there a problem?
Oh, it's nothing major. It's nothing major. It's just, it looks like your license, your registration here is a little outdated.
Adelaide, you know it's up to date.
I've requested it. I just haven't been able to pick up my mail in a while.
Oh, darling, don't worry. It's all gonna be all right. I have some friends. I have some very, very influential friends. And, they're very good at expediting this kind of, bureaucratic formality, let's call it.
Actually, if I remember correctly, no, I did pick up my paperwork. Let me just check, and he'll rifle through his own paperwork and find the document that has his ID up to date.
She is going to lay a lilac hand with incredibly vibrant, icy blue, like 2-inch long nails on your arm and go, oh, there won't be any need for that.
Adelaide is sweating.
No, listen. Because we've got you on file here. And it's all right. It's just a single document that's out of date. But, you know, in order...
But it's not out of date. Or your paperwork is out of date. But mine is certainly not. I wouldn't ever come here without the proper paperwork.
Of course not. But, you know, I'm sure we can clear this up. It's just... For things like this... You know, it can take an awful long time to get an issue like this solved. And, well, I wouldn't want your very, very nice vessel to be impounded while you had to wait.
I'd like to roll an insight check on
her. Yeah.
She has fucking ulterior motives, and I need to know what they are.
That's an 8. I rolled another 3.
Jesus.
I'm not using these dice anymore. I'm sorry, Ducky Dice. I'm going away.
On an 8, Nicholas? This is total bullshit.
Ma'am, I apologize.
Oh, no, that's all right.
No, I apologize in that I've never been treated this way at this port before. There has been a standard of excellence.
Well, I suppose they're not always this nice to you. She pulls you in with a grip that is much harder than you expect and goes, and I am being nice, doll.
What do you want?
It's just a little matter of a minor little processing fee this one time. And we can get your paperwork up to date and make sure that your lovely, gorgeous vessel arrives to the dry dock safe and sound and legal.
Adelaide will flick his eyes to Snap.
To an outside observer, might look as a moment of nervousness and fear about the ship. But internally, within the kobolds and Adelaide, having been in situations like this before, this is a, we need to talk. And he will try to convey, in that momentary glance, for Snap to message him.
Give me a persuasion.
13.
All good, boss?
Steal the money, rip the paperwork, on my signal, then disappear.
Snap gives you the smallest nod. Give me another insight check. Snap will help you.
Okay. Much better. Bastard 20.
You're being shaken down, and she is not so subtly threatening to burn Freedom's Wings. What that tells you is that this isn't just her. This is not an official asking for a bribe. This is a protection racket.
I don't think you heard me. I said, what do you want? And I'll ask you kindly not to bullshit me.
All right. If we're going to do business, then we're going to do business. 50's a good start.
For what? It's a service fee, ain't it?
You could call it that. Yeah, it's a service fee.
And what's the service you would be providing me?
Oh.
I'd like to know where I'm putting my money.
These are dangerous times. Ships go missing all the time. We had a huge, and I'm talking huge, fire at the dry docks last week. Terrible business. But for captains that are very cooperative, I have friends in some high and some low places.
And if I take my business elsewhere?
Well, our services come with a degree of security, you could call it that.
A grin creeps over Adelaide's face. How much money does Adelaide have on his person right now?
On his person? I would say you maybe travel with 100, which is a lot, but you know that you have to, because you don't go to the bank that often, so you carry a lot on you, and you carry more on the ship.
He has 100. How much of those 100 does he owe to other people?
All of them.
More than all of it.
All of
more
them,
than
technically.
All of it.
Just for us to be clear.
You are carrying the equivalent of about $3,500 on your person.
Yeah, okay, cool.
She is asking for the equivalent of $1,800.
And how long would my service be good for?
For as long as you're in port and then you're banked with us afterward. This can be a one-time thing.
And if there were other services that I would be inclined to use, terms I'd like to add to my contract.
Oh. You see her size you up a little bit more. And she slides a little piece of paper across her desk to you. Then maybe you and me should have a chat, doll.
He'll take the piece of paper, look at it.
It's an address.
I would love nothing more.
Then how about this? Since you're being so cooperative, we could do half now, half later, if you want to meet up for a drink.
On the condition that no one's frightened if I bring my employer.
Buy a girl dinner before you offer to introduce a third.
How about this? 40 now, 10 later, and no one gets frightened.
Oh, I don't scare easy. And she goes to shake your hand.
He won't put his hand out yet. Not only would I like my ship not damaged and kept under watch, as you so kindly have stated, I'd like it gone from anyone who would be trying to look for it that ain't me or my associates.
Well, now you've just got me plain intrigued.
I'll give you a list of names of people who I am more than willing to give the whereabouts of my ship to.
Lists of names? This is all very cloak and dagger.
No, it's not. This is business. You know how to do business, don't you?
Of course I do.
Shall we shake on it?
Why don't we?
And he'll shake her hand.
The money changes hands.
Adelaide gives a quick look to Snap of abort mission, don't fucking do it.
Give me a persuasion check.
Oh my god.
Yeah, that's a 16.
Snap is just transfixed. Snap has never borne witness to a shakedown on this level.
Adelaide will write down on a piece of paper his name.
Uh-huh.
The names of the three kobolds.
Uh-huh.
He will write down Mila Bentetza, Madwin Fakhworu, and he will write down Haskai Karas. And he'll hand the list over.
Tiara takes a look. One of her eyebrows raises, and she says, "You do know some interesting people."
I'm sure you've heard the rumors.
Who says I have? Who says I haven't?
You seem like a very well-connected, very intelligent woman. And I would hate to be on your bad side.
Aren't you a gentleman? All right, be on your way.
Pleasure doing business with you.
Likewise.
And he will walk out of that office sweating fucking bullets.
Jesus Christ.
Ladies and gentlemen in the audience and everyone in between, I would like us to meditate briefly on the wisdom of splitting the party. Because sometimes splitting the party is fine, and then other times splitting the party means you hand the real government name of your associates to the mob.
Look, I would so much rather have the mob on my side than the actual government. Adelaide has not been to this train station in a very long time, and he has never taken it outside the city. He goes to the ticket booth and is utterly perplexed by what to do.
Where are we taking you today?
Do I just like state it? Or do I write it somewhere? Or
where are we taking you today?
Is there an attendant around here? He'll look around for someone.
Where are we taking you today?
Right, okay, what was it? Peregrine, Falls? Peregrine Lake? Peregrine, the Peregrine place. Is that good enough?
How many in your party?
There's just me.
Not the kobolds?
No, the kobolds are staying.
They're on shore leave.
Very well.
Do I go now, or is there like a ticket?
25 centimes.
Right. Do you take change? Is that fine? Like, do you dispense change?
The price of your journey is 25 centimes.
Okay. And he'll put in a senior.
The senior lands on the mechanical hand that's outstretched. The whole body turns. The senior is dropped into a chute, and a series of coins are deposited in the other outstretched hand of the mechanical attendant.
Wow, it's like a magic trick. That's very cool.
We wish you safe travels.
You too. I mean, yeah. Thanks. Is there...
You too.
Do I go now? Is there a ticket, or...
You see that the tickets are deposited out of a little automatic slot.
He'll take it, read it over, go, all right. If I need to change this, you know what? I'll just figure it out on the way.
And he'll walk off, looking down at the ticket, looking up at the signs, looking down at the ticket, looking up at the signs, just utterly lost.
And eventually he will find his way to the train.
Mila, after a little while waiting, having found your seat, Omar is standing invisibly, holding the handrail. You see, entering your car is Captain Adelaide Vihammer.
She waves, Captain.
He will stride over to her, looking absolutely lost and very panicked. Open bewilderment on his face. Did you see those, like, ticket holder guys?
What, the Senor Trent?
The automaton things?
Yeah, Senor Trent. Isn't he cute? I love him.
That was one of the most harrowing experiences, and he leans in close, and I just got finished talking to the mob, and that was worse.
Okay.
I don't like technology.
Okay, well, the mob, technology. Sounds like we have a lot to talk about on the journey, but... If you don't like tech, I should probably tell you a little more about who we're meeting at Omar's place.
Stand clear of the closing doors.
Well, they're a little bit eccentric.
I mean, you and I are both eccentric.
Right. But you know how when you met me, you didn't like me very much.
The Express 4, Pellegrin View, is now departing. Stand clear of the departing train. Do
Dear passengers, the Meridian Metropolitan proudly presents the news of today, brought to you on the go.
The Amazing Ballad, following tremendous public acclaim, has made the decision to lengthen his tour through our glorious Imperial Republic. The famous acrobat and performer will grace stages in Port Amity, Valparais, Almira, and Ben Cancel before returning to the capital for one last encore.
Renewed tensions across several cities in the sovereignty of Orneida continue to rise as public opposition to the current government breaks into clashes in the street. Opposition forces cite the government's draconian arcane policy, as well as its commitment to the terms of the Peace of Quitgrad, as sources of ongoing frustration. Her Imperial Excellency has urged foreign powers to a continuing dedication to peace.
Her Imperial Excellency, Empress Katharina Clemencia, again invites all of the subject citizens of her fair capital, Antonia, to a grand parade in honor of the tricentennial anniversary of that city's founder and namesake, the Countess Antonia Letizia de Bray, Contessa Vermeil. A grand procession headed by Her Imperial Excellency herself will take place along the Leofortes Liberatrices, including a possibility for an audience with Her Excellency herself from among her beloved subject citizens.
You pass through initially an elevated track over city blocks. But the buildings rise even higher than the train tracks do. Gargantuan towers. Unthinkable even 50 years ago. If Antonia is a monument to anything, it is the feats of which magic is capable. As the city begins to thin into what, in this direction, are suburbs, commuter towns, and eventually the small farms that scatter the south bank of the river, the buildings fall away. They grow shorter and shorter, and the track levels out to meet the rolling hills that make the boundary of the southern edge of the city. With the buildings at your back, you see a countryside basking in sunlight, and behind you, the glittering towers of the city you've left behind. Omar comes out of invisibility and takes a seat in your, at this point, mostly empty train car. His reappearance barely registers to a group of commuters and passengers used to zoning out and coming back into focus while on the train.
It's Antonia, baby.
Adelaide freaks out more than anybody else on the train, not quite expecting Omar to be exactly where he was.
Towards the end of the journey, you turn a bend on a hill and you see it. The lake. Adelaide, it's larger than you expected it to be. You can't quite see the other end of it from the shore that you're headed towards. And in the midday sun, it looks less like water and more like some kind of liquid metal just shining. And you see the little boats with their very jaunty little sails. You start to see small crowds of people on beaches. It's theoretically early winter, but what is early winter in the tropics? Mila, you know that the rains will be here soon, like by the afternoon. But in the moment you arrive, I think, Adelaide, you are treated, and you can even sense you're being treated
to a tourism poster's view of this place. The train pulls into the station, which is a quaint little village affair. Intentionally so. Omar says, "We haven't made any arrangements to be picked up, so it'll be a little walk, but Mila, darling, where exactly did you tell your acquaintance to meet us?"
I kind of just had to say Luck Pelgrim, but I'm assuming they will know to assume.
Armand will have let them in, almost certainly. I mean, they're known to us, to the house. So. As you walk from the train station, turning quaint street after quaint street, as so often happens when you travel a lot, it feels difficult to imagine that you started your day where you started your day, because you are so far from the physical and emotional state you were in but hours ago on the deck of Freedom's Wings. Adelaide, when's the last time you were on vacation?
True vacation? Probably the last time that he saw Paz, before they parted ways. They went and sat along the river and had a brunch, mimosas, and had a really nice, relaxing time. It was also the day that Paz announced he was leaving. It's been many years, and they are sentimental, but not particularly overjoyous memories.
You arrive at your destination. Not quite a manor, but a fine house. In a style that both in our world and in this is referred to as colonial. Two stories with a grand set of doors that nonetheless aren't meant to be entered by more than a few people at a time. This isn't a gate. Adjacent to the house, Adelaide, something catches your eye, because I don't think you've ever seen one of these before in a context like this. A carriage built on large metal wheels with a place to sit, but no place to attach horses. Instead, at its front, a small kind of globe-shaped area that contains a device not dissimilar to what holds Freedom's Wings up, a crystalline engine.
Leaning over to Mila. "Is that one of those automobiles I've been hearing about?"
Yeah. Have you not, like, seen one?
I'm not usually out this far into the richer neighborhoods.
Right.
I haven't been back in Antonia for a while anyway, so...
It's fairly new, but Omar still keeps horses. He just likes them.
I could never get used to riding in that thing. It's, It handles like a dream, but that's honestly part of the problem. You don't feel the bumps.
It's okay. I can get used to it.
Omar leans over to you, Adelaide, and says she can drive a little bit better than I can.
He's a passenger princess.
I cannot wait to see it.
At this point, Omar has already ditched the bandana and hat and is kind of walking with a degree of familiarity.
Adelaide, on the other hand, is looking very out of place and not stressed, but unsure of himself for the first time.
Mila's very confidently walking for the front door.
The house is mostly white with a blue-green trim and blue-green shutters that at this point are wide open to get air into the place before it rains. You see waiting at the door are two figures. The first is a man clearly in his late 50s, human, not particularly tall, but muscled, which is only barely disguised by the relatively nice suit he's wearing. Mutton chops on the sides, and a surprising lack of balding. This is a man who is aging gracefully, with eyes that are at once warm, but you know he's taking you in. Adelaide, as you approach, Omar kind of leans back and says to you, "That is Armand, the caretaker of the house. He served with my father on the Western Front, and suffice to say, is quite handy."
Understood.
The other figure
is someone Mila immediately runs to and gives a tight hug. Though their wiry frame receives it pretty awkwardly. Stick-thin black person, shock of gray hair, though they are very, very young. You can't quite tell if it's natural or dyed, if they wanted it that way. But it goes with the rest of the aesthetic. Spectacles, kind of like Mila's, except there's also a pair of goggles around their neck. And the most, disheveled academic clothes, very high-waisted tartan pants and a white blouse that's, unbuttoned about 3 buttons and definitely hasn't seen an ironing board in weeks. And coming from under one of the sleeves, a shiny silver chrome prosthetic arm that has all sorts of gadgetry and compartments. You really can't tell what's gonna come from it, but it does have a very intricate letter B carved onto its side as well as a symbol for the Enterprise that made it, which belongs to Rain's parents. This is Mila's best friend from the academy, who she hugs very tightly and says, "Oh, thank God you're here. You won't believe what's happening."
Don't knock my arm off. Don't knock my arm off. Don't knock my arm
off. Dude, I've known you 6 years. I'm not gonna knock it off.
You're all right. You didn't die. That's good.
Mila takes a step back, still holding Rain's shoulder, and says, "It was kind of close."
"I imagined it might be."
This is Captain Adelaide. Captain Adelaide, this is Rain Badencore.
Sticks out the firmest looking handshake. Pleasure.
He will take off his hat, slick his hair back, and shake their hand.
While your hand is still in Rain's, Rain turns back to Mila. "He muscle?"
"Well, sure, and other things. You know,
he's got muscle.
He's got muscle, that's true. He's been helping us out. I chartered him to take me out to the camp where Omar was. Captain, this is my best friend from the academy. 7-8 years we've known each other. We live together, though I'm sort of... The feds maybe want me. But I'll pay rent. You know, I'll pay my side."
"Right, because he's back. So you can still pay rent."
"I'm
sorry, was that rude?"
"A little, yeah. That's a little rude. But yeah, Omar's here."
"That's okay.
Omar, you know Rain.
He's alive."
"Yes, isn't that great?"
Omar nods at Rain, knowing that they're going to need to spend a little bit before they can have an actual conversation.
why don't we go inside and I can catch you up?"
Armand turns to you, Mila, and goes, "Madame Bentezza, it's a pleasure to have you at the house again."
"Always, Armand," and she gives him a hug.
He returns it.
As they walk in through the front doors, Mila does say to Armand, "Just so you know, we're in a bit of a touchy situation. Utter discretion is needed at this time."
"But of course. Should we be expecting unexpected company?"
"I hope not."
"Understood."
Razzie is scooped up and held in
the crook of Adelaide's arm.
Omar takes a second to just confer with Armand and looks in you and says, Mila, would you mind showing Adelaide to one of the spare rooms?
Yeah, of course.
I'll just take a second to...
Yeah, however, do what you gotta do.
Thank you.
And Mila starts taking Adelaide upstairs. This entire house, as opposed to Omar's townhouse, is more private. The entire house is kind of a private wing for the family. But there's still, the rooms are still separate upstairs in case they ever have any dinner parties on the first floor.
You wander through a house that is meticulously well taken care of, but you know does not often have people there. It's mostly just Armand here. You arrive at a very well-appointed little guest suite. Not a full, like, ensuite bathroom situation, but definitely a wash basin, chamber pot, like everything you might need for a stay here.
Mila points it out to Ali and says, here, this is where I stayed when I first came here. Miss Montoya wasn't quite on board with, you know, this whole situation yet. So she'll treat you well. The room, not Miss Montoya. God, I hope you never had to meet her. No, she's lovely, but...
Is it going to be all right if I'm here?
Yeah. She won't know, but... That's not the issue. She, you know, Omar's in trouble. She won't mind. She's just... That woman scares me.
I won't spread my mess around then.
You're cleaner than I am, I think. So, we'll be fine.
Speaking of cleanliness, is there a wash basin or something?
There's one in there, but you might just want... Do you want, like, I can help you run a bath?
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Yeah, just take a look. I have some oils in the third drawer over there and salts. See if you want anything. I'll get the water running.
Well, just a bar of soap would be fine.
Adelaide needs that 3-in-1.
Mila looks at audience. You couldn't see the silence that Mila just gave Adelaide. She's like, I'll run you something.
All right. I just one thing. I would like to bathe Razzy as well, but with the state he's in now, and you look at him, he is... His scales are tinted with this dull, pulsing green that you haven't seen before. With the state he's in now, I would be careful with any water that he is bathed in. It might need to be boiled off or treated with a bit of special care.
I don't quite know what to do about that, but we can ask Herman after you take care of yourself.
It's just, you know, it's a bit poisonous at the moment, so I wouldn't.
Okay. Well, I'm sure we can figure something out.
Mila, you realize that there's something Adelaide isn't understanding, which is that if you wanted, you could draw an individual bath for each and every one of you here in succession.
Do you want Razzy to take a bath as well? Does he like splashing around?
He does. I usually bathe him after I'm done.
Okay, let's do that then.
All right.
You get settled in. Don't mind the... Sorry, this... Like I said, this is kind of... There's like a couple of... I think there might be a few books I left in there and portraits and stuff like that. Don't mind that. Just make yourself comfortable. I'll be right back for you.
Okay. Roll an inside check, Mila.
Okay, that's a 16.
Adelaide hesitates in a way you have never seen him do before. And you slowly come to realize, through watching him interact with people, it's not so much he is afraid or nervous or anything like that. You realize it's simply because his perception of city living and suburb living is that there are rules and etiquette and all sorts of steps you have to take for every little process. And he is incredibly lost because he doesn't know what any of them are. He is not someone who has ever truly lived in anything anyone could call polite society. He has run into it a few times, but he's never actually participated in it in any meaningful way. And he looks like if he had to be sat down at a table with more than three forks, he would have a mental breakdown. From the, I don't know how to hold myself in this environment. And even the, you go in another room and I'll drop a bath, is like, oh, should I, you know, do I go into the other room and wait respectfully until I'm called? Do I wait in the other room and do I need to take my shoes off before I get into the house? You can see he picked up Razzie because he didn't want Razzie tracking mud around. Like, he is lost. You get the sense that if you tell him to go into another room, he will walk into the room, look around, and just stand there until he is told to do something else.
Mila walks back into the room a little bit, puts a hand on Adelaide's shoulder, and like guides him to sit down on the bed and sits down with him and says, hey, listen, I know it's a lot. You should have seen how many times I picked up the wrong spoon when I met these people.
Am I going to have to memorize spoons?
No, I've got message, Owl. I've got you covered.
Oh, okay.
But you know Omar a little bit by now. You know what? He's a mess. I'm a mess. We're all a mess. It's fine. It looks beautiful on the outside, but that's just because Armand is here taking care of it. And we're still on the job. We're just gonna take a bath and clean up and get ready for the rest. But there's nothing here that you don't know about. Okay? It's just Armand and Rain. Rain is a mystery to everyone, myself included. But I said we can put your Drake in the bathtub. Like, we'll be fine.
All right. Just let me know if I step out of line or...
No, if you need anything, you let me know.
Well, I don't know what I need.
Literally any questions you have.
Sorry, I'm...
So if I say I'm gonna go draw a bath, you make yourself comfortable. What questions does that raise?
I just don't want to offend anyone by stepping out of place. I mean, like, do I take my shoes off? Do I need different clothes? Do I...
Mila, you actually see the answer to Adelaide's question about shoes that you know, but Adelaide didn't. As the little bits of mud that were caked into Adelaide's boots are deposited on the floor as he walks, you see the small cleaning enchantments that keep this place clean without Armand having to do too much work just sweep them away almost instantly.
Look, you're worried about like the mud and Razzie and stuff, but your shoes are dirty, so are mine, but did you see anything? Do you see anything in the halls behind us?
Peeking his head out into the hall. Is that magic? It's used so casually.
I know. Rich people are a pain in the ass. But they're pretty handy. Or sorry, the people that work for them are pretty handy.
All right.
So you're taken care of, okay?
I appreciate it. And I'm sorry for being...
You're not sorry for anything. I dare you to relax. Stay here. Unpack. I'm gonna draw you a bath. I'll call you in a minute.
Thank you, Mila. Really. For everything you're doing.
And she gives him a little smile and walks out of the room and is just going to draw a bath with a little bit, nothing too much. She just puts a little bit of coconut oil in it for the moisture and some salt of eucalyptus just to give it that kind of green smell that she thinks will be homey to Adelaide.
The day continues into afternoon, which means afternoon tea, which progresses into evening, which means preparations for dinner.
Why are there so many meals? I don't get it.
Because the food is good.
And through all of this, the only person that is with you is Rain.
Mila fills Rain in pretty extensively. Tells Rain not only in detail about Ale having shot Omar, the tattoos on Omar, the weird pale elf that we also saw when docking, the fight at Tres Barrancas, Mari, the war mage she's hoping to visit in the city, the mob encounter, and also about the things that she discovered last session regarding the ledger and Omar's kind of treatment.
I was hoping that there would be something, some kind of... I don't think traditional treatment is gonna work. I haven't been able to study... I mean, I've been able to study the condition, but it's really weird and complicated. So I was hoping that we could maybe develop some kind of magical aid. Something that would maybe help him not turn. Some kind of... I don't know, my mom had like these tokens when I was little. Or, you know, if you had something more specific that could counteract the magic. I know it might be hard.
Charm could work. Enchantment might work. It's mental, right? You said it's something in his mind.
I think so. That's what the war mage I was working with said.
All right. We can try some. It's going to make him a worse shot, you know. His eye.
Oh, because of the depth perception?
I imagine that's quite a big ego hit.
I mean, honestly, he's got other weapons now. He's not thrilled to use them, but...
out of all the things that are an ego hit, I think this is the slightest one.
Well, no. If it's mental, and it's about turning, he needs things that make him feel like him.
I know, but...
And you see that Rain has actually picked up on something there.
But we feel like him?
Yeah. He's a soldier. What's a soldier that can't shoot? I'm just saying. It's not... If that was rude, my apologies.
No, that wasn't rude. That's okay.
Captain, you're the captain, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
How's the captain looking, having come out of the bath?
For once, clean shaven.
No stash?
He still has his mustache, but it has been trimmed. His face is clean, and his hair has been combed. His hat is not on his head, and...
He's got Timothée Chalamet hair hiding under there.
He almost looks presentable. His clothes have been not washed because he couldn't find anything to wash them with, really, but beaten, so they are slightly less dusty. And Razzie gleams at his side with some sort of scale finish polish that Adelaide took a good long while to sit, take the time, and just work into Razzie's scales.
Captain, you can fight, right?
I can fight, yeah.
Teach him to fight?
Teach Omar to fight.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what I can teach him that the military hasn't, but sure.
Military teaches you how to kill. He needs to know how to fight.
Yeah, I can teach him how to fight.
Maybe we go out for some shooting soon.
Rain will turn to you, Mila, and go, if it's mental, competence is treatment. Feeling like you're getting it right is treatment.
Okay. We can try. I would still like some kind of failsafe if you could help out.
And Mila goes to, like, the library that is in here and picks up... You know how rich people have in their houses, like, books they've never touched in their lives?
The cocktail books.
Yeah,
coffee table books.
So Mila picks up a copy of, like, the Countess's favorite spells. You know, something like that. And starts paging through, and it's like, I was thinking maybe something that could have fire off, like, a dispel magic or an enhance ability to help him stay in it, if we could work on
you
that.
You get into the weeds with Rain over tea, and they seem very intent on the enhancement angle.
Okay.
Prevention might not be possible, so whatever enables Omar to better fight it.
As they're working, when they get to kind of talking about parts and other things they could model a prototype off of, she asks, and what about Rahelia? I was hoping to see her as well.
Couldn't make it. Long story. Family stuff.
Okay. I hope everything's okay at the Enterprises. I might need to, if I could still... If you think she's trustworthy with all this stuff, we might be getting into the weeds with some military personnel. And I was hoping she could maybe help, if needs be.
I'll put you in touch.
Okay.
I trust her.
Okay, if you trust her.
A lot is happening right now.
I'll say.
Might be easier if you go to her.
Noted. We'll figure it out.
I'm glad you made it.
Yeah.
She'll be glad you made it too, but I'm glad you made it.
I'm glad I made it. And she puts her head on Rain's shoulder as they continue to work.
The sun begins to set. After a fashion, Armand enters the room.
Messieurs, dames, dinner will be ready shortly.
Thank you.
I would hope it pleases.
Mila nods at him and stands up and smooths out her skirt and says, shall we? She says, smiling to Armand, I expect Omar is waiting already.
Monsieur Montoya has taken his seat.
Very well, thank you. And she'll point towards the dining room.
Mila, I don't really know the pomp and circumstance of all this. I cannot just follow your lead.
There's no pomp and circumstance, I've been telling you. It's fine.
You've got a butler. That kind of necessitates...
I don't have a butler. Omar has a butler. But also, it's still just dinner with Omar. How many times have you had dinner with Omar?
Alright, fine.
And she'll lead the way.
As Mila begins to leave the room, Rain looks over at you, Adelaide, and says, it does take some getting used to. Just follow my lead.
Right. Okay.
Just act like you know what you're doing. That's most of it.
Okay. Fine.
The dining room is simple and plain, but well appointed. Omar is standing, as an act of politeness, next to a large chair at the head of the table. Not in a full suit, but definitely has been dressed for the occasion. Dinner is already on the table. Not a large multi-course fare, but a simple but incredibly pungent boar stew. Mila, you would know that Armand is a skilled hunter, and much of what gets eaten in this house is what he has either produced from the garden or hunted himself. So, wild boar, root vegetables, red wine and broth, something that feels more than anything like a warm welcome in a bowl. served with... Adelaide, you do a slight double take, is several loaves of fresh bread that Armand has also found time to make. There is fine salted butter. There are several bottles of what looks like very good wine.
Adelaide takes this all in with a nostalgia foreign to him. He's never had a home like this. This doesn't remind him of his home, but it does remind him of the stories of home that he's heard before, and the feeling of settling down and coming together that has been offered to him over and over again. And not for the first time, but for the first time in a long time, he accepts the feeling of rest and letting somebody else do the work for him into his gut, into his bones, and pulls out the chair for Rain next to him and then sits down himself.
Rain will stop you from sitting for a second as Armand pulls out a chair for Mila.
Mila gives a gracious little smile, knowing that Omar had been waiting for her to sit down before he did himself. She goes and lays a hand on Omar's arm, though, before she does, and gives him a kiss on the cheek, and says just loud enough for him to hear, "You vanish there for a second," before settling into her seat.
Omar gestures to the room, which feels a little silly because it's a room of five people, but he still gestures to the room that everyone take their seat.
"My apologies, darling. I'll try not to make a habit of it."
Adelaide leans over to Rain and goes, "Pomp and circumstance, I told you."
"Sometimes it's cute, but it is a bunch of bullshit."
Mila starts serving herself and goes, "It's cute when he does it."
Dinner is served.
Adelaide actually strikes up a conversation with Rain next to him. "You're from the city. From what I know about you, you're not to be impolite, but from money."
"That'd be accurate."
And yet, you seem more comfortable with my type of people."
I don't
mean that as an insult. I'm more so meant you're... How do I say this? You seem to find it easier to be in less refined company than some others here at the table."
"Hey.
Mila, you are better at it than you were, but when we started Donna's journey, you were absolutely not accustomed to the traveling life."
"Just because I haven't traveled a bunch doesn't mean refined is what I'm used to."
"I guess I don't like to make a fuss. And it's, for some people, it's nice when they get to have a fuss made about them."
"I didn't think about it that way. I appreciate your candor anyway."
"Yours too."
Mila, while they're talking, sneaks a look at both Omar and Armand to try and gauge a little bit like what they make of the conversation.
Armand doesn't really make anything much of the conversation. I think he looks over and is clearly listening. It's not his job to be invested here. Omar looks preoccupied. He's eating. He's present for the conversation only insofar as it would be rude not to be. But there is something else on his mind that is keeping him from participating.
With her legs kind of crossed one over the other, Mila tries to, like, nudge his calf under the table.
Without missing a beat, he will look up, smile, and say,
"Some of us are a little more accustomed to the fuss, but I do understand that it can be stifling."
Not stifling, no. More just, you're used to your circumstances and I'm used to mine.
I hope it has not made you feel unwelcome.
Not at all. Not at all. It's good to see a different perspective every now and then. Reality check.
That genuinely brings Omar to laughter.
I cannot stress enough the pleasure it brings me to have you all at my table. Here, Mila, you see whatever was on his mind either come to the forefront enough or go into the background enough that he's here. And I cannot thank you all enough for being here tonight at our table. It's good that we're all here. I hope all of you will pardon my disappearance this afternoon. I was informed that my former comrades, Sergeants Cavagnac and Domery, have been court-martialed.
Mila's cutlery drops to the table.
For their participation in, I'm not sure what the army is calling it, but I think present company understand the reasoning for their disciplinary action. And I took the afternoon in preparing funds from my limited capacity for their legal defense. A hand, Mila, grasps yours. Omar raises his glass to our friends and to everyone present or absent that has made it possible for us all to sit at this table, for me to sit at this table once again. And here Omar's eye glances specifically over Adelaide before turning to you, Mila. It has been a long road, and I would not blame any of us for choosing that the road end here, that we retire into safety and obscurity, or depart for some other shore. But I would also like to assure you that that is not my plan. With no offense intended to the marvelous accommodation you have provided, Captain Adelaide, Omar stands up. I've had more than enough of running.
Adelaide stands as well, lifting his glass, and says, "Well then, to feather beds and sticking our ground."
Mila doesn't stand up, but she does raise her glass and says, "To fighting men and to fighting words."
Friends, to our move.
Our move.
Our move.
From a World Asunder is Louisa Zanardi as Mila, Nick Sturman as Adelaide, and Simon Ivchevich as the world falling apart around them.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening.
It was kind of hard to understand exactly what the conversation was, but eventually I got out of her that, I mean, to put it lightly, she's offering protection, and...
Wait, shh.
We at the Metropolitan Rail would like to take this moment to remind you that antisocial and counter-republican elements may look like anyone and be carrying anything. Make sure that all of your belongings are within your sight for the duration of the trip. And if you see anything suspicious, do not be afraid to inform the authorities present at every station. We'd like to thank you for your attention and wish you a pleasant further journey.
Haven't you heard that announcement like 1,300 times?
Are you kidding me? Señor Tren was talking about us.